In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups, the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
My first reaction, though, Paul Pierce, drafted by the team in 1998, played the last 15 seasons, was somebody that I was hoping was going to retire with the Celtics. I thought this was 35 cents in the dollar. There's no guarantee that any of those picks will get in the lottery, and they're gutting the team. And, you know, it's not like they have salary cap flexibility because Rondo makes big money. Jeff Green and Wallace combined make $20 million next year. So it's not like they're gutting the team and getting to start over. I don't like the trade. Run base, I dodge the pin.
All right, and welcome to another episode of Basketball Court, the podcast where we litigate the great questions of NBA history. It's a pretty strange place, Basketball Court, but we spend a lot of time here figuring out some of the great what-ifs of NBA past and, in this case, NBA future. That's right, we got a very special episode on tap for you here today in Basketball Court. There are many basketball courts in this country, but there is only one Basketball Court, goes the terrible, terrible tagline. I'm Judge Peter Andrews here in the U.S. District Court for the District of Basketball, and I'm joined by our co-counsels this week, Miles Johnson. Say hi, Miles.
Am I muted? Wait, do that again.
No, you weren't muted, so it's all good. So there's Miles. Hi, Miles. And we're also joined by Sam Tidings.
Roar Lions.
Roar Lions, indeed. Welcome to another episode of Basketball Court. We got a really interesting topic this week, which is actually sparked by Rob Moen, who some of you may remember as the only guest attorney who's come in here and successfully won. In the wake of yesterday's Boogie Cousins trade to the Pelicans, there are two NBA franchises who are really in a state of disrepair. And this week on Basketball Court, a very special episode of Basketball Court, we'll be looking at those two teams and asking the question, would you rather be a Kings fan or a Nets fan? Let's set the stage.
Yeah, and the first thing I did after the deal was approved to DeMarcus. I had a nice exchange with him. I said, my friend Steve Jobs liked to say, let's put a dent in the universe. And DeMarcus, let's do something big. He said, I like the sound of that. And so I've had numerous exchanges with him. I've spoken to him on the phone. We want to create a global brand here, a global franchise. And I said that, hey, I'd like nothing better than a billion Indians to know who DeMarcus Cousins is.
Let's put a dent in the universe, said Vivek Ranadive. And in a sense, he did. In a sense, he did. Before we get into the episode, let me ask you guys, so what were your initial reactions upon hearing about this Kings-Nets trade? Is this the worst trade of the last decade?
Worst of the last decade? I don't know. I mean, I was actually at the gym when the trade went down, so I came back to
humble brag
to see it on my phone. No, here's the thing: the Planet Fitness in Pittsburgh is so nice, you guys. I mean, the outside isn't that great because they've had a bunch of break-ins. People have gotten like all their stuff stolen out of their car and windows and smashed. But the inside's pretty cool, and they have Tootsie Rolls. Anyway, I came back to my phone to see the news, and I honestly, my first thought was like, thank God for Boogie Cousins, because he's gotten out of one of the more dysfunctional sports organizations on the planet. But I'm just not sure how he's gonna work alongside Brow. I don't see it. I don't think.
Yeah, my initial reaction was just surprise, because I had spent most of the afternoon looking at the trade machine and trying to figure out, after Woj first said that New Orleans is trying to trade for Boogie, like, what assets do they actually have? And I came to the conclusion that, well, they don't really have anything, so this isn't really a trade that's going to happen. And then, lo and behold, it happened.
Yes, yeah, so taking something like 40 cents on the dollar for Boogie, were the Kings there. And so that kind of gets into the question this week, which is to set the stage, there are sort of two teams in the NBA who, thanks to some really poor trades in the past, have got themselves in a bad position for the future, where they both have no talent presently and not a lot of avenues to get talent in the future. So those two teams, the Brooklyn Nets, made an ill-fated trade for Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett that involved them giving just a bazillion different things to the Boston Celtics, including their unprotected 2017 draft pick, which is almost certain to be one of the top picks in the draft. And then they just don't have any guys over there in Brooklyn anymore. And then meanwhile, the Kings, similarly, they trade their franchise player in a season in which they had gathered a lot of veteran assets to try to make a run at the playoffs. Decided that was ridiculous and have sort of switched into sell mode. But thanks to a very bad trade with the Philadelphia 76ers, the Kings don't really have much avenue to get talent these days. They owe the Sixers a pick swap in 2017, and they owe the Sixers their 2019 first-round draft pick. So the question on the table, and this, again, was suggested to us by Rob Moen, the question is, would you rather be, for the next 5 years, a Kings fan or a Nets fan? And so our council will present arguments as to which team has the brighter future. Let's start with Sam. Sam Tidings, who believes that the Kings, despite the Cousins trade, are in the better spot. So, Sam, take it away.
Thank you, Your Honor. My first point of order, and I think this is important to remember for the rest of the episode, is that both of these teams are really, really screwed. And so making the case that, like, the Kings will be better than the Nets or the Nets will be better than the Kings, I mean, I don't really know what Miles has cooked up, but I don't think either of us are going to turn this into, like, a super team dynasty like we usually do on this show. So I just want to get that out there. So the Kings...
Yeah, my question is, do you think the Thunder are going to win a championship in this timeline?
You know what? That's a low blow.
Is it?
I think it is. I don't think that was fair. I think that was a leading question, hostile witness, some sort of court bad thingy.
The thing is, when you're the judge, you can do all of those things if you want, and no one will give you shit for it. So, and also, not a low blow, because you've given the Thunder a title every single episode so far. So, if this is going to break the streak, I just want to, like, call attention to it.
What is the basketball court equivalent of being held in contempt? Do we have one of those yet?
Yeah, you know, it's tricky. I would say it would be like, I mute your microphone or something like that. I guess if we're talking like basketball terms, it'd be a double tech, right? So you have to be ejected. I'll think about it.
Okay.
I'll keep that in mind. I'll try not to get ejected this week. So here's why I think the Kings will be better than the Nets. Because the Kings, unlike the Nets, they already have some assets and some ways to get future assets. They have Willie Cauley-Stein and Buddy Hield, who, you know, aren't exactly Kobe and Shaq, but you have a big man who can defend and a two guard who can shoot, hopefully. They have a first round pick this year. It's the worst of their pick and Philly's pick, which either way should still be in the top 10. They have the first round pick from the Pelicans, unless it's in the top 3, which, just as an aside, how is it possible that Vlade put together this deal where they can't even get the number one pick for Cousins? Like, even if somehow the Pelicans miss the playoffs but then win the lottery, Vlade's like, no, that's fine. You guys just go on. So that's just ridiculous to me. They also have Philly's second round pick, which should be in the mid-30s. And unlike the Nets, they do have their own 2018 first. And then they have all their picks from 2020 and onward. They do have some trade pieces like Darren Collison, Aaron Aflalo, Tyreek, and Kosta Koufos, who might get them some picks. Probably not anything high, but at least
What do you think? But, like, Sam, what do you think the trade market is for those guys? Like, who out there is sitting themselves saying, like, damn, I need Darren Collison on my team? Stat.
Well,
the Washington Wizards.
If it was any team that wasn't the Kings, I think there'd be reasonable offers. But I think it's like, if you've ever been like a fantasy like football league and one guy like makes like a really dumb trade week one, and so you just send him like really bad offers the rest of the season and hope he accepts it. I kind of think that's like what teams are doing to the Kings right now, and then biting on them. So
do you think is that the legacy of the Stauskas trade in 2015? Because, you know, at least there's sort of a discontinuity in management with the Nets, right? But the Kings made that awful trade and have sort of doubled down on it with Vlade Divac.
Yeah, and the thing with the Stauskas trade is it means the Kings aren't going to have their own pick in 2019, which should be pretty high. But even if they do the pick swap this year, I mean, assuming they don't, you know, win the lottery or end up in the top three, they're probably going to end up around where Philly is in the draft either way. So it probably won't make a huge difference. Not to, you know, burst the bubble of all the Sixers fans on Twitter. But where I think the Kings are going to improve is that next year they're going to be terrible. Like, when Cousins is not on the floor, this is the worst offense in the league by plus minus. And he will very clearly not be on the floor for them next year. It'll be hard to imagine that agents will want to send their players out there with there's really no hope of winning. So they're going to have to really overpay mid-level guys, which isn't the worst thing, but might be a strategy they want to hold off on for a little bit. So they're going to really stink, and they're probably going to end up with a top three pick next year. And then after next year, when they will have, you know, alienated their fan base and alienated all the agents and ended up in the top of the draft again, I think the NBA is going to step in like they did with Sam Hinkie and the Sixers and sort of hint, hint, nudge, nudge, and force Vlade out of there. And I wouldn't be surprised, since Vivek
doesn't... So sorry, to be clear, it's just Vlade, or is Vivek being tossed too in this scenario?
I think Vlade's out, and I think, I was about to say, like, Vivek doesn't even own 20% of the team. And even though his management group owns 65% of the Kings, I think after, you know, this embarrassment and what next year is surely going to be awful as well, I mean, part of the reason that they were adding all these veterans around Cousins the last 2 years is they were trying to put a playoff team in for the, you know, start of their new stadium. And that very clearly is not going to happen this year and not going to happen next year as well. So I really would not be surprised if there was some sort of coup to push Vivek out of there, at least to not make him the controlling partner of the Kings anymore.
Miles, so, you got any thoughts on that?
I just want to say that Brooklyn does own that 2019 first rounder.
That's great for the Nets. I'm really happy for the Nets. But by 2018, the 2018 offseason, the Kings are going to have Cauley-Stein and Hield. They're going to have a top 10 pick from this 2017 draft and a mid-lottery or late teens pick from this draft, which is apparently a super deep draft. I don't know enough about college basketball outside of the Ivy League to make a really strong guess on who they're going to end up with. But they should have at least.
See, now that's how you know we're in basketball court is where our college basketball knowledge is the Ivy League and nothing else. But and let me also just point out that Buddy Hield blows and is not likely to be a good basketball player. So to like, I'm curious why you think he's a part of this young core.
Because I think there's a difference between him being terrible. I mean, what's his ceiling right now? Is it J.J. Redick? Is it just someone who does nothing but shoot threes and can't really dribble or play defense or anything like that? Because even that would be a huge step. Because look what the Kings have drafted at shooting guard the last, you know, 11-plus years. Between Stauskas, who they bailed on immediately, Ben McLemore, Kevin Martin, who they ended up giving up on. Like, they've sort of had this elusive search for a shooting guard who can actually shoot. And I think, you know, Hield's shooting 35% as a rookie from three. And I think there's definitely reason to believe he can improve on that going forward. Even if he's just a three-point shooter, it's a big upgrade because they need someone to space for that terrible offense.
Can we also, what is it, like, how do you go from Buddy Hield, who is one of the best college players in the country, to Buddy Hield, someone who, as our judge so illustriously put it, blows, like, in the span of 2 years? Like, how does that happen? I mean, I know, like, certain guys, you know, thrive in a college system. Guys like Kaminsky, Kyle Singler, who else was like that? But I don't get, like, what that's about. Like, Buddy Hield should be, you know, I mean, he's not terrible. Like, he should be pretty good. Like, I don't get what the deal is there anyway.
I mean, isn't some of it, you know, isn't it, it's a combination of, you know, I'm not sure the athleticism is there to sort of add a secondary NBA skill, and I'm not sure that he's, you know, maybe he develops into someone who shoots threes at above average clip, but, you know, he's having to shoot from further away in a game that's a lot faster paced. And so, especially, you know, I wonder whether he's a guy, you know, you cite J.J. Redick, maybe it's better if he's on a contending team where he's not the first option and he's more of a spot-up guy. I don't know. I think it's, I'm not sure he has any skill other than shooting that's at an NBA quality level.
Well, I think it's very clear that the next 2 months and a full season are going to give him the chance to develop the rest of his game, because he wasn't really getting that option with New Orleans, with Jrue Holiday handling the ball so much and Anthony Davis. And I think part of it for the Kings is they're just going to be like, listen, we really wanted this guy in the draft and didn't get him. We've been trying to trade for him for a while. Now we got him. Let's throw him into our offense and see what he learns from it. I don't know if it's going to do anything. I don't think it's going to be good enough to keep them out of the top of the draft next year. But, you know, by summer 2018, they have Cauley Stein, who, if nothing else, is a very good rim protector. Hield, who, if nothing else, is a three-point shooter. A top pick in next year's draft. A top 10 pick in this year's draft. Another lottery pick in this year's draft. And then they'll have clearly enough cap space to throw out all the overpriced mid-level guys. You're going to have to overpay guys to get, you know, to go out there to the Kings. And you can build a decent team in the next 5 years off of guys on rookie contracts and guys who are decent and making more money than they probably should be. And with new ownership, hopefully, and new management, they can probably do a better job of drafting and filling out the roster than whatever the Kings were doing the last 3 years.
I also just
and so this is
not like an objection or anything, but what do we think happens to Dave Joerger? Like, are his days in Sacktown also numbered? Because I don't see, I mean, like, I don't get, there's Boogie had what, six coaches, like, over six 7 years? 7 years?
Yeah.
Right. So I don't see much reason to keep on the coach afterwards if you're gonna clean house anyway.
And, I mean, there'll be coaching options out there. I mean, the thing with Joerger is that he did really well with a veteran team in Memphis, and he was sort of promised that when he came to Sacramento this year. And it's pretty clear that with Boogie gone and Matt Barnes gone, and I'm guessing they're going to trade and get whatever they can for Aflalo and Ty Lawson and Collison and all the other vets on this team. So it's probably mutually beneficial for Joerger to not be there anymore.
Also, if you're Joerger, you just have to, like, step away from the table at this point. Like, it's just grisly.
It's like, you get out of there.
Especially because, you know, Joerger did also come out kind of swinging for Cousins. You know, he's quoted in ESPN recently. He's quoted on the radio as recently as this week as saying how great it is that Cousins is going to retire a King. You know, I think the real thing the Kings have shown this week is just the danger of impatience. They gave up. They either gave up on DeMarcus too early, or they hung on longer than they should have. But it, you know, a good team makes a plan and follows the plan, you know, until it becomes logical not to anymore. I don't think the Kings were at that point. And so if I were Dave Joerger, I'd say, well, you know, what the hell's this?
I mean, it would be like being invited to a dinner party, ringing the bell, not hearing any answer, and then opening the door and find all your friends are murdered. Like, that's about as bad or as close of an analogy as what you'd have to experience your day being. It's just so horrendously bad, like the situation in Sacramento.
You think getting sent to New Orleans is as bad as getting murdered at a dinner party?
No, I think I think if you're Dave Yeager,
that's cool.
The position you're in as coach is about as grisly, pun intended, as if you watched all your friends get murdered, or not watched them get murdered, but just came in on the scene afterwards. You know, blood all over the curtains and what have you.
Can I make my case?
Sam, I want to. I actually think it'd be better. I'd rather let Miles make his case for the Nets before you make the case against it. Let me ask you one question about the Kings, and then I'm going to turn it over to Miles to the Nets. Do you think that for the purposes of this discussion, it matters that the Kings are in the Western Conference?
No, because I think that the teams in the East are going to start improving as well. Like, you know, if Boston ever turns those picks into something useful, they're going to be tough to beat. Not Warriors tough to beat, but I mean, you have to figure eventually one of the Warriors, Spurs, and Rockets will start to fall off for whatever reason. And there's a good chance the Clippers might get broken up in the next year or so. I mean, obviously, we have no idea how Davis and Cousins are going to work together because they haven't even played a game yet, and Cousins can leave next year. And that there's definitely a lane for a team that actually hits on their draft picks, and the Kings are going to have, with the exception of 2019, ample opportunity to pick high or trade their future picks into something useful on a rookie contract or some, you know, a disgruntled superstar elsewhere who wants a fresh start. That they should be better than this now. I mean, they've had Isaiah Thomas, the Celtics' Isaiah Thomas, and let him go in a sign and trade for nothing. They had Hassan Whiteside and let him go for nothing. Like, their scouts are onto something, and that they're finding and, you know, identifying useful players. And then something goes wrong. Something goes horribly wrong. Maybe it's just King stink or whatever. But there is some disconnect between them acquiring useful talent and finding, you know, someone who can help win basketball games. And then something just goes terribly wrong. And they give $20 million to Rajon Rondo. Or they trade, you know, they pick swap for no reason to dump Nick Stauskas' salary. Or they trade an unprotected first so they can sign John Salmons. Like, something just keeps happening. And I really think that if they just get Vivek out of there, or at least muzzle him, and get a GM who's actually been a GM before and not just an NBA center, that there's definitely a lane for the Kings to be sort of like a better version of what the Nuggets are now, like a team on the rise that has a weird mix of like decent, okay, a little above average veterans and draft picks that are starting to come into their own.
Speaking of John Salmons, I saw him on an Amtrak once. And what was great about the interaction is I'm sitting down in my seat, and of course he's like, what, 6'7", 6'6", so he's like a huge black guy walking. I'm like, that's probably somebody. I'm like, oh shit, it's John Salmons. And so I like point, and I'm about to say, hey, aren't you John Salmons? And who at that point I think was playing for the Bulls. And he makes the gesture to me like, no, bro, keep it cool, because I don't want like everybody in this Amtrak to get all hyped up because I'm John Salmons. I just thought, unless you're like a basketball nerd like me, someone who in the future, of course, would, you know, do this basketball court podcast, hey, nobody knows who John Salmons is. Like, you're just some tall black dude on an Amtrak. And it wasn't even like the quiet car or anything. You're in like the coach car of an Amtrak. You couldn't even get a flight. I mean, this is going from New York to DC. I don't know why he was doing this in the middle of the season now, come to think about it. Damn, I don't know what John Salmons is doing. Anyway, we have a really skewed view of how popular he is. I can tell that story whenever people bring up John Salmons, which is not very often, of course, because, again, he's not that famous. But
is it better or worse than my Jeremy Lin story?
I don't know. Your Jeremy Lin reaction was better. I just couldn't get over him being like, hey, no, keep it cool, like, don't blow it up. Don't blow it up. I'm John Salmons. Like, but you know what? Whatever you have to do to believe in yourself. Use your self-esteem. And whatnot. Anyway.
Oh,
Sam. Sam, are you Are you done making the argument for the Kings?
I'm done with my pro-Kings argument, but I am definitely excited for my anti-Nets argument.
Okay, I'll go pro-Nets before I go anti-Kings, just because I have a lot less to say.
Pro-Kings, or pro-Nets, excuse me. I mean, the may it please the court, of course. I mean, I'm not coming out here all incorrect and proper. I think the big thing here is between these two teams, only one has an all-star that has ever been named an all-star team. That's Brook Lopez for the Brooklyn Nets. He's never averaged fewer than 15 points a game, with the exception of his rookie season. Currently is shooting career high from three. Is passing the best he's passed in his career. I mean, Brook Lopez is someone who perhaps past versions of Miles Johnson has said that he is only worth about a bag of barbecue potato chips. But right now, Miles Johnson realizes that he's actually someone that you can at least build a playoff contending team around. That caliber player does not exist for the game. Yeah, so the thing is, we really just kind of do it whatever works, whatever needs to suit my individual interests at that time. And right now, I need Brook Lopez to not be a horrible basketball player. So right now, Brook Lopez is slightly better than mediocre. That's fair, right, I think. I guess but in all seriousness, like you could build a cohesive starting five around Brook. Space the floor. He's got an outside shot. You know what? I can't even lie and say he's a good rebounder because he's not. He's a terrible rebounder. And he's like 7 fucking feet tall. I have no idea how he's this bad at this, but you can space the floor with him. He's got decent footwork on the low block. Somebody can play inside the post. Pick and roll game, I would assume, is there if he can stay relatively healthy. And again, like Sam said, we're not sort of, like, by no means am I saying that Brooklyn will contend for a title in the next even 20 years. We're just really comparing the worst of the worst here. So both of these teams are in really bad shape, but it helps to have someone who, you know, at least has, you know, the talent that you're looking for to build a team around. And the only person that comes close on the Kings roster would be Willie Cauley-Stein, who, you know, while he is, I think, an above-average defender actually already, certainly an above-average rim protector, the offense just isn't there at all. And if there's anything that we know about the league now, you have to be high-powered on offense. It's not enough to be this great grinded out defensive team, as the Grizzlies have found out over the last several years. You have to be able to put the ball in the basket, and Brook Lopez is one of the only players in Brooklyn or Sacramento who's capable of doing that. So that's really my only pro-Nets argument. The rest is really anti-Kings. I don't know if Dan wanted to cross challenge or whatever the legal term is.
Yeah, I'm just going to object to Brook Lopez being the centerpiece of a playoff team. He's only under contract through next year. I mean, do you think the Nets are going to max him out? Do you think they're going to keep him? Do you think that, I mean, what do you think they could get for him in a trade? Or do you think that he's worth hanging on to, you know, build your future or net 7 seed around, or whatever you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that Brook Lopez, first of all, you shouldn't max him out, just right off the bat. Like, there's no, even in the darkest of dark basketball court timelines, there's no situation where you should be throwing max money at Brook Lopez. I'm not sure what you could get back for him in terms of, like, what his trade value is. I would be very, very surprised if any teams were willing to give up a first round of any kind for Brook Lopez. I think you're just talking about utility players and second rounders at this point.
And yeah, he's under contract for the next year, which to be clear, is that's 20% of the timetable that we're talking about here. He's only talking about the next 5 years. I think if you re-sign Brook Lopez to a more team-oriented economic kind of deal, which is a really roundabout way of saying not very much money, I do think that you have a piece at least to start building around. Is he going to be, you know, this all-time franchise great center? No, but he never was going to. I mean, even Brook Lopez, you know, rookie year Brook Lopez, this is never going to be who this guy was. But he can be a solid guy in the middle. I'm trying to think of a comparison. He's better than, like, Luke Longley was for the Bulls, probably, right? He's like, you know,
it's not helping your case comparing him to Luke Longley.
He's like,
well, the question isn't is he better than Luke Longley? The question is he better than Willie Cauley-Stein? And I think the answer to that is probably yes.
He's a better offensive player than Willie Cauley-Stein. He's not better defensively, I don't think.
He's also 6 years older. And, you know, this is going to be Cauley-Stein's first real chance to really be the focal point on the interior end of an offense. So we don't know what does he have much of a jumper? No. But if he can finish near the rim and, you know, essentially, what's his best case scenario? Tyson Chandler, Marcus Camby? Isn't that acceptable?
One of those is, I would not want Marcus Camby on my roster.
Marcus Camby in the late 90s was actually, did I get my well actually on? He was pretty good. He took the Knicks to the finals when Patrick Ewing went down in 99. It was on the back of Marcus Camby and no one else.
What happened in that finals, by the way?
Footage not found.
Oh, okay.
All right, Miles, what else do you got in your quiver for the Nets?
That is literally my only pro Nets argument. I wasn't trying to be coy before. There's really nothing else here in terms of pro Nets. I mean, because we're talking about assets, the best of which is like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, probably. You have Jeremy Lin on a ridiculous $38 million contract over 3 years. There's just no reason that they should have paid Jeremy Lin that much money. You know what? No. I take that back. The other one bright spot, if you're the Nets, is that Yogi Ferrell has been playing some really good ball recently. And it remains to be seen whether, you know, that's going to pan out. But he's a young guy that coming out of Indiana is a really, really gritty defender. And if he can put his offense together, that's somebody that, you know, maybe not your starting point guard, but someone off the bench can give you a quick, you know, 8 points every night, 8 to 10 points every night, and can be kind of a spark plug off the bench.
So here's the bad news on the Yogi Ferrell front.
Oh, no, does he not play for them anymore?
He plays for the Mavs now.
Damn it. Okay, so then not even that.
So that would be a pretty big obstacle to his success for the Nets.
Weirdly enough, I'm just going to jump in here. The Mavericks is like where Nets point guards go to die. Like, they have Deron Williams. They have Yogi Ferrell. Jason Kidd went there at the end of his career. It's just like a weird like connection that those two teams have.
It's like the school-to-prison pipeline, but for players instead. Here's the thing. Here's what I'll say. The reason for that mistake, I use Basketball Reference. I want to shout them out because I use Basketball Reference in preparation for all of my briefs and whatnot.
Did they pay you to say that?
Here's the thing. The site's like free, right? So they always say, if you use us like on your podcast or in like your papers or whatever, like please like shout us out because this is free. I just feel bad that, what are we, 9 episodes deep, and it's not like we have this wealth of information, or I don't anyway. I'm not just remembering this off the top of my head. I want to just shout them out. But they don't update their stuff, you know, all the time. So they still have Yogi Ferrell on the Nets, and even funnier, they still have Boogie on the Kings. Not with the Pelicans yet, which I guess is a little more excusable since that trade just happened, but they still have Yogi Ferrell on the Nets, and so that's my bad, you guys. Never mind. So yeah, no more pro Nets arguments.
You don't have anything else you want to put on the table.
I genuinely do not have anything else.
I feel like the strength of this episode is going to be built on the anti-other team arguments. Honestly.
It's like that new dating app that's, what is it? It's called Hater or something, where you match people based on the stuff that you mutually hate.
Well,
that's how poisonous and like,
that's pretty fucked
totally,
up.
Totally radioactive both of these teams are. Yeah, there's really nothing going on for them. So you have to compare the worst.
Okay, so I would say there are two things that each team has going for them that are the same for both teams. One, both teams have a shiny new basketball stadium. Two, both teams have pretty dope newish uniforms. That's about it.
Rihanna goes to Nets games. That's pretty cool. And today is her birthday. So shout out Rihanna.
Shout out Rihanna.
Happy birthday. Friend of the show, Rihanna.
What do you think the odds are? What do you think the odds are that Rihanna listens to Basketball Court? Like,
oh, don't even talk like that. It would really genuinely make my day if I knew that Rihanna was listening. The odds are so low. But if Rihanna, if you're listening, I love you. Just please, you can come on the show anytime. You win automatically. You don't even have to put up an argument. Just come on. You don't have to sing anything. Just say, hi, I'm Rihanna. You've already won the episode.
Can we just like mail her an episode? Just like on a flash drive?
I have a
in like an envelope with like ransom letters things. Like, do you want to hear about the 2002 Kings?
Okay, here's a question.
I have a friend. Sorry, wait. Before we move off Rihanna, real quick, I have a friend who used to work in the White House. Yeah, I have cool friends. And she
your
said
friend Joe Biden.
She said that yes, she said that that Rihanna visited the West Wing one time, and they like tried to follow her around to find her, and she is apparently the most just like the most physically beautiful person that this person ever has ever seen in the entire world. She's so tall and just like fully come out of some sort of other world to exist in our world. That's our tribute to Rihanna on this day, Rihanna's birthday. Anyway.
Yeah, we don't deserve Rihanna. I also wonder, when was the last time you think Rihanna has used a flash drive? Like, if you had to guess.
Do you think Rihanna like uses computers and stuff? Like, if you were a pop sensation, would you be on there all the time?
No, I wouldn't. If I'm Rihanna, I'm having literally everybody else do everything but drink and smoke my weed for me.
I agree.
I like sing on songs.
I'm going to go with 2009.
2009?
Is the last.
In 2009, what was she brother, like? Rihanna? Like 19 years old? Like, I don't know how old she is. That's
ridiculous. No. 2009, how many years ago was that? The years of 2017, that's like 8 years ago.
That was like freshman year of college.
Wow.
I used flash drives back then. Still do.
I don't use flash drives at all anymore. That's why we got Google Docs. All right, this episode has just gone wildly careening off the rails. And so before we get into a debate as to what the best system of transferring files from one computer to another is, does anyone have any last arguments they want me to consider before I render a verdict?
Wait, no, I have lots of anti-Kings reasons. I thought we were just saving those.
Oh, no. Man, you got to fire away. I'm like getting...
Oh.
I'm getting ready
right,
for
well,
the...
Let's hear him, Miles.
Yeah, like in that case. Okay.
Let's go.
Here's the thing. Yeah, here's the thing. If you're any like top-tier caliber free agent, from now over the next, let's just say 3 years, there's no way, like if your agent even suggests that you're anywhere near Sacramento, you got to fire him. We're talking about an organization that is one of the most dysfunctional out of any of the major four sports. We're talking about also an organization that, again, Boogie had 6 coaches in 7 years. Was promised literally like 2 weeks ago that the owners came out and said, we are unequivocally not dealing DeMarcus Cousins. And then come to find out that Vlade Divac passes on a deal that would have landed them Andre Drummond, passes on a deal with Orlando that they almost had a deal with the Lakers, but the Lakers weren't willing to give up Brandon Ingram. And so he felt as though all those better deals had passed up, and he, I guess, was just feeling the pressure and just had to do the deal now. There's no reason that anybody should ever want to play in Sacramento, really ever again, as long as Vivek and Vlade are still there. You don't go there. So what that means, right, is that unlike Brooklyn, Sacramento is a free agent ghost yard. They can't rebuild through the draft because they've literally shipped all their picks away. You can't lure any type of free agent talent there because it would be insane to go play for a team that is so toxic right now. All of the losing the Kings are going to do over the next 2 years, funnily enough, benefit the Sixers like immensely because of the pick swaps. And there's just no reason that you'd go to Sacramento over there. So that and also, right, if you are the Kings, if you're the Nets, you'll just have to make it on to 2019, right? When 2019 hits, you have your first rounders, and 2020, you'll have your first and second rounders. You have to hold on the next about 3 years. You're in the middle of Brooklyn, so you have a place that you can possibly lure free agents to. You don't have Billy King anymore, which I guess for the purposes of comparison, he would be their equivalent of Vlade Divac, or I don't know, maybe he's their Vivek in terms of just the basketball ops meddling, not necessarily the positions within the franchise. There are more things you could potentially, okay, if you were, for example, trying to kidnap children, the van that you would use.
What is happening in the show?
The van that you would use to lure.
What are you talking about?
The van is so much more appealing than the one that Sacramento has to offer. We're talking about a van that's just busted, bumper sagging. The candy is all gross, like raisins and like Werther's Originals. So it's not enticing at all. Brooklyn is like Brooklyn, and it's, you know, sexy. Not to kids necessarily, because that I think is maybe crossing a line.
No.
Wait, is your argument that the Brooklyn Nets would be better at kidnapping children than the Kings are? I just want to put it in the correct terms there.
For the any possible federal agents listening to this podcast, that's not what I'm saying. What I am saying, essentially, in probably some not so great terms, is that you can at least make a case to any type of free agent, so anybody that you're drafting in the near future, that our franchise, unlike the Kings, is not dysfunctional. We're not going to make you a promise only to turn back that promise right afterwards once you turn your back. We are going to do everything in the best interest of you as a player and us as an organization to help the team win. And yes, Sam is absolutely right. If for some reason Vivek gets pushed out, then all this changes, you know, assuming that they don't hire someone else who is equally incompetent. The only problem is the Kings, first of all, great basketball city, so their fans are really supportive. He is making the Kings a ton of money. Like, they're not by any means in the red. Like, the Kings are making money every year. Your Honor mentioned the brand new stadium. It has all these like weird tech features, like robots that come in, pick up the, if you, what was the Kevin Arnovitz piece? He was like, if you drop a slice of pizza in the new Kings Arena, there was a robot that would come by and make a note that you had dropped it. And it's kind of weird. So you got sort of all of the things that, like, he's not ignoring, or he's not the fiduciary sort of responsibilities he has to his shareholders is being fulfilled. So there's not, to me, as great a push to get him out, because we're just talking about incompetency as it pertains to basketball ops. If Vivek is still there, there is no way, there's no reason that any kid coming out of college or any player who is a free agent should step anywhere even remotely close to Sacramento.
So I don't think Rihanna's going to listen to our next episode, but I'm very sure the FBI is going to listen back to this one.
Oh, that's fair. Sorry. That's fair.
Yeah. I don't really need to make much of a case of why the Nets are screwed, because they don't have their own pick the next 2 years. They won't have Brooke Lopez in 2 years. Miles talked about bringing in free agents, and the best free agent they've actually signed is Jeremy Lin. Their strategy last year was to sign all the restricted free agents, and then all of the contracts got matched, and the Nets got left with no one. And the best restricted free agents this summer are Caldwell Pope, Otto Porter, who's going to get matched, Nerlens is going to get matched, or the people who are just terrible, like Kelly Olynyk and Mason Plumlee, who is either one better than Cauley Stein. I mean, I don't think a marquee free agent's really signing anywhere unless they just get way too much more money than they should be. And at least the Kings are going to have their own picks, or, you know, the Sixers pick, which should be pretty high, the next 2 years. And that is hopefully enough, along with whatever they get from the Pelicans this year, to help build the core of a team that's better than Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who's as old as Buddy Hield, or Sean Kilpatrick, or Yogi Ferrell, who's not on the team anymore, or Brooke Lopez, or whatever the Nets can throw together.
All right. Are you both done?
I'm very done.
Yeah, I don't have anything else to say.
All right, verdict time. Yeehaw. Look, it's a really tough call, right? Because the Kings and the Nets are both so sad. You know, the Kings in particular, to go from, we're going all out this year, we're going to show DeMarcus we love him, we finally built, you know, the taxpayer dome here in Sacramento that is going to be the sort of the home to the next great version of Kings basketball, and then to blow it up in such a shocking, unexpected, pathetic, in terms of what your return is on DeMarcus fashion. I mean, the fact that DeMarcus doesn't even get on the plane back to Sacramento, right? That, like, he's just, that they just sent him to the All-Star game and you never saw him again. That's a rough blow for Sacramento fans to swallow. You know, so is the question. And then on the Nets, on the other hand, the Nets, just that Paul Pierce trade was so, you know, those are some old dudes that they got in that trade, right? And the what they gave up was so dramatic. I guess what I would say is that I do not actually think it's likely that the NBA will step in to push out either Vivek or Vlade, because, you know, there have been incompetent general managers and owners throughout the history of the NBA, and the problem with the Sixers wasn't, and I say problem loosely as a process truster, I don't necessarily agree. The league saw the Sixers as an embarrassment because they were flouting the rules, you know, because they were using the rules to their maximum extent, and they had a plan. The plan just didn't really make the NBA look good. That's different from a team being so incompetent, you know, that they, the Kings are not trying to be sneaky in any way. They just blow, you know, they're terrible at it. So
it's kind of like the Knicks, like 7 years ago, after the whole, when the Isaiah Thomas scandal happened, the NBA sort of forced Dolan to hire Donnie Walsh. I think it's more along those lines than a tanking hinky thing. I just think it's like when someone really incompetent is in position of power, the NBA usually does what they can to get them out of there or lessen their influence.
Yeah, that's fair. But I am gonna, although that was a good attempt to save, I am gonna come down and award the victory to Miles this week, because I think the Nets do have slightly more going for them than the Kings do at this point. And I think at present, I just think there's such hopelessness in Sacramento that that's going to be tough for them to overcome anytime soon. So, Miles, congratulations. You win.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Even after the candy van analogy, you're still going with that?
Unbelievably, I already took points off of him for that, and he still won.
Wow, okay, why do I do this?
Here's what I would like to say. First of all, Rihanna, please only listen to the first, say, half hour of this. Also, I love you. Second, like Sam said to open off, really just if you're a Kings fan or a Nets fan, I'm really sorry. And this is coming from someone who has to deal with Ernie Grunfeld shenanigans. It's just neither one of these fan bases, but perhaps especially at the Kings, who have had one of the more rabid, loyal fan bases over the last 20 years. They just genuinely, straight up, don't deserve a front office that's this incompetent. So, like, hearts out to you guys. Like, I'll be pouring some out for you. Like, good luck, because it's really a shame, like, how bad Vivek and company are and how bad that DeMarcus Cousins trade is. If it's not the worst trade in the last 20 years, it's definitely top three.
All right, so there we have it. Another, in most courts, the winning counsel does not make an acceptance speech, but I allow it in this courtroom. let's wrap it up there. We've gone somehow 50 minutes on this topic. Sort of an unusual episode of Basketball Court, but I'm glad we discussed it. It's better than the All-Star. You know, we can save the All-Star one for next time.
First time we ever moved the time machine forward instead of backward.
Yeah, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. So I'm just, you know, until now we didn't want to look into the future, but it seemed like the stakes are pretty low on this one. So, B-Ball Court Pod is Twitter account. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Basketball Court Podcast. You can email us at basketballcourtpodcast@gmail.com. You should leave us a review in iTunes and say how much you love the show. Do not mention anything about the pedophilia. That would be bad. I think that's everything. We'll be back soon, probably. I don't know. This podcast is very irregular. The next one will be a big one. Episode 10. Wow. We did it.
10 episodes. We did it, guys.
10 episodes, 10 episodes in 13 months.
In 14 months. We're heroes.
It'll be incredible. But yeah, thanks so much for listening, everyone. I think that's it. So thank you to Sam Tydings.
Thanks. It's always happy to be here and lose to an argument about why kidnapping children is easier in Brooklyn than Sacramento.
And thanks to our champion, Miles Johnson.
And good luck to all the kids out in Crown Heights.
I've been Judge Peter Andrews. Thanks for listening to Basketball Court. Court is adjourned.